Hi, I'm Clemmie Telford and it's time to get open and get honest. Each week, I interview a guest about a topic that we, as a society, often shy away from. From sex lives to salaries, life and death, religion and real bodies, no subject is off the table. Welcome to Honestly, the podcast. Divorce is something everybody hopes to avoid, but statistically we know it's likely to affect lots of married couples. This week I'm joined by the wonderful Sarah Langford and Rosie Green, who help me better understand the nuts and bolts of what goes on during a divorce. Sarah, a barrister who wrote the amazing book In Your Defence, Stories of Life and Law, helps unpick the technicalities of divorce, recounting her experience of legally divorcing couples. Whilst Amazing Rosie opens up about the breakdown of her 26-year marriage, she talks about the person she has become through this whole process, as well as one that is now happy instead of heartbroken. This episode is raw and honest, but it does positively affirm that even when it feels as if our lives are being turned upside down, there is hope and we are able to rebuild from the ground up once again. A reminder that this podcast is called Honestly, so yes. It's all about being honest. And I like to start with a quick fire round to get us all in the mood. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how fun are you?
Fun?
I mean, I thought it was about 8.5.
Good. Own it.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty fun. I reckon I'm with you on 8.5.
Good girls. Well done.
Maybe 9 on a good day, 8 on a bad day.
Half kind of comes and goes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's still pretty high odds. I definitely think I slide on a much bigger scale than that. On a scale of 1 to 10, how popular are you?
Oh. With whom?
Yeah. You know, it's for you to decide, isn't it? Open-ended.
I don't want to be punchy, but I think I generally am. I think it comes from being deeply unpopular as a small child. I think that made me try really hard for the rest of my life.
Yeah, I get very excited about people.
Yeah.
I like people.
Yeah, I genuinely like them and I think they respond to that. Most people.
Such a barrister's answer though, isn't it? Give me a number, girls.
All right, I go for another 8.5.
Oh, I'm going to have to copy you because that doesn't sound as boastful as 9, but then we don't want to be a 7.
How rebellious are you on a scale of 1 to 10?
Oh, I fall down on that. But what I do, I probably say about 4.
Wow.
But I have made sure that all my friends are about 9. So basically,
hang out with
they
some rebels.
Suck me in and then I get to blame it on them.
Brilliant. You're up for being badly influenced.
Yeah, and then I can run quickly.
Yeah.
So.
God, I think my rebelliousness has just basically gone downhill since the age of about 16. So I think I was properly rebellious then. And now I think I'm like a 3 or something.
Yeah, I say, if I look back at some of the things, and I've not done anything wildly rock and roll, but I err on this side of being a goody two shoes now.
Yeah.
Favourite colour?
Duck egg blue.
Yellow.
Ooh. Most prized possession.
Hard to do this. It's
hard.
Like an arsehole.
We had a massive house fire that meant all our stuff burned down. So that has been, it's made me quite zen about physical possessions. And it was quite a kind of therapeutic, what does it all matter really, as long as...
In some ways it's a huge...
It is. It was.
A huge cleanse.
I think so. Yeah, so possessions...
And nothing you can do, is there?
No. It's good.
Well, no, I don't know if it's my most prized possession, but I feel like all the notes that I've written for the book that I will never write are on my laptop, so I would be pretty gutted if that went.
Tell me they're on a cloud. Are they on a cloud?
I don't know if they're on a cloud.
Put them somewhere.
Okay.
Google Docs.
Yeah.
Not an advert, but
yeah,
you got to. My laptop breaks so often, it feels. How would you describe your relationship with money?
I'm quite cheap, but I kind of do live a bit too hand to mouth. I mean, they always say with a barrister, you spend stuff 3 times. Like, you spend it when you get the job. You spend it when you do the job and then you spend it when the money comes in, which is not excellent financial health.
No.
I'm afraid.
Oh, I think I could apply that to the life of a freelance writer as
well. Yeah, probably. Maybe that's, anyone who doesn't have a regular paycheck.
Exactly.
Absolutely. I always feel quite lucky in that I can enjoy money when I'm spending it. You know, some people just kind of can't even enjoy it when they're spending it. So I do think that. But I do get a bit scared by, like, you know, kind of budgeting and stuff. Also, it really bores me, is the truth of it.
No, because I now want to get it straight so that I know what I've got to go and enjoy.
Yeah, so with
you. I'm so panicked all the time that I don't enjoy it very much. I've never really been a saver, but it would be nice to go, I've saved for that great thing.
It'd be like sorting out all your document files. Yeah, like I can imagine it gives you a great sense of control.
Exactly. And I think it's important, probably in relation to what we're about to talk about. This is a question I ask everybody, but it's very pertinent today. Do you believe in marriage?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I do still, I think. But no one's asked me that since it's all gone horribly wrong. So that's quite interesting.
You do. Your instinct was to say yes.
Yeah.
Is it ever okay to lie?
Yeah, I lied the other day. I took my kids to Jumanji. I tried to get them to go and see Little Women. They didn't want to go. And then as we left Jumanji, they were like, see, Mummy, we told you you'd love it. And I was like, I loved it.
I hated it every
minute. I just couldn't bear to ruin their enjoyment.
That isn't lying, is it? It should have another word.
It's a white lie, isn't it? When you're like, the shop is shut. I thought it'd be open on Saturday as well, but it's shut. Soft play has moved.
Yeah. What star sign are you?
Capricorn.
Which is
the goat. Yeah.
Gemini.
Are you? Interesting. I know quite a bit. My dad's a Gemini. I know a little bit about Geminis. Don't know much about Capricorns. Are you into it at all?
Slow and steady, right to the top of the hill, get there in the end.
It's quite interesting, isn't it? You can sort of, I don't know, like I feel it's sort of comforting in some weird way.
It's
probably shorthand for getting to know people.
And also, like, the astrology part is pretty woo-woo, but the impact of the moon on definitely on labour wards and psychiatric wards, etc., etc. There's no denying that.
Really?
No.
Famously, yeah.
Okay.
Loads of babies will be born on full moon, and similarly psychiatric wards. And particularly as women, we're cyclical. So we are impacted by that. And if you begin to know that when full moons are, which is one coming up in a few days.
I've got an app on my phone.
Have you? Yes. God, this is a whole new world I don't know about.
Honestly, whenever you're feeling a bit like, so this full moon at the moment, which is Capricorn full moon, is all about going back over stuff that predominantly started last summer and just to re-iron it out for the last time, hopefully, and put it to bed.
Oh, right, okay.
Very personal.
There you go.
Yeah.
What do you want to be remembered for?
I would like to remember sort of funny, honest writing.
Great. You manifest that. It's good.
I think I would like to be remembered for having changed something for the better. Mm. Doesn't really matter particularly what, but have made an impact in some way.
And do you think you have started to do that?
I hope so. I mean, that was what I wanted to do with my book, was to try and let people into the world of the law and make it human. Mm. And I hope so. Mm.
Three words your inner critic or imagined worst enemy would use to describe you.
Calm down, dear.
Amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not patient.
No.
God. Manipulative, maybe.
Wow.
I mean, there are probably quite a lot, but I think.
What are the things that is being said in your head now that you're not saying?
I guess something probably about not being very good at the detail and shit domestically.
Does that matter?
Well, matters to some people, and it's only occasionally I'm like,
Can you not cook?
I cannot cook. And the other thing I do that I hate about myself is that when I get like really tired, I get all kind of flappy. I hate the fact that I can never find anything in my handbag. That just really annoys me. I'm always having like a scurry around.
As is everybody.
Yeah.
Anyway, on to the actual main big topic, and we're here to talk about divorce. According to statistics, 42% of marriages will end in divorce. I mean,
it's not great odds, is it?
It's really not. And like, if you wanted to be really close to the bone about it, if you think what the average cost of a wedding is, which is 30k, it's like, would you bet 30k on something which is nearly 50-50 odds? It's like, it's not great, is it? And if you're not the person who gets divorced, then the chances are you might be the child of divorce or someone very close to you. I knew the odds were bad, but they're not good.
They were worse than that, actually. Totally 50-50, but...
I mean,
it's going down though, isn't it? I think.
Yeah, but don't you think that's because less people are getting married?
Yes, I think you're probably right.
So it's skewed, isn't it?
I mean, cohabitation's gone up 26% in the last decade.
It is going to be a kind of palm sweaty kind of topic, I think, because it's if you're married, which I am, and I'm a child of divorce, and I've seen it affect lots of my friends, it is a big subject that is difficult. And I was absolutely inundated when I was asking people on Instagram about it. So, Sarah, you're a family lawyer. Can you give us the basics from a legal point of view, a divorce versus an annulment?
So I should probably say I'm a family and criminal barrister.
You're right.
So the difference between me and a solicitor, I mean, that if you wanted to separate from your partner and get divorced, what you would probably do first is go to a solicitor and get some preliminary advice. And hopefully, if you manage to pull it off, you would be able to separate, sort out your finances, sort out the arrangements for your kids, and get divorced without ever seeing a barrister.
Right, so that's only if it's going to go to court.
Exactly. So what I was involved in was the bit where people just couldn't manage to do that.
Have those negotiations.
Without a judge making the decision for them. And that's when you enter the court process. And the court process is set up to try and help people resolve themselves. So you will begin by having quite a short hearing, and then you'll have a wait before the next hearing and another hearing, which is the kind of last hurrah.
So you hope that
you hope it doesn't go all the way to a final hearing. Mm-hmm. A final hearing is the one where all the evidence that you've been asked to gather gets put in before the judge. You both give evidence and get cross-examined, and then the judge makes the decision for you about how your finances are going to be split or how your kids' time is going to be divided. And that is, in some cases, it has to happen because people can't agree.
Is it not part of the thing that if you've even got to that point, then things have started unfurling quite a lot?
Totally. And I used to, by the time I met a lot of clients, they were entrenched because the arguments had been going on sometimes for years, back and forward through solicitors. Sometimes they had tried mediation. Mediation is now something that you have to say that you have tried, or at least that you want to do it, but your ex won't.
So what is mediation?
Mediation doesn't involve any lawyers. You go to a third party who basically helps the two of you come out with an arrangement.
And does that look anything like therapy or not?
I don't know. Therapy, I mean, all of this is going to pull at some deep stuff, right? So even when you're having conversations in mediation, there'll be stuff. But the questions won't be like, why are you doing that?
No,
it's going to be solution focused.
Okay.
So you both sign up to trying to reach a resolution. If you can't reach a resolution, then you go to court.
From the moment you're stepping foot in a solicitor's office, is it costing you money?
Lots and lots of solicitors will do a free consultation to get a kind of guide about what your particular scenario looks like and where they think it might go one way or the other. What, unfortunately, you don't get now is a free consultation paid for by the government. So it's all means tested. And now you are really unlikely to get legal aid in a family case, in a private law case, which is one individual against another individual, unless there are allegations or evidence of domestic abuse. So this means that the courts are swamped by people trying to represent themselves because they just can't afford £200 an hour or whatever it is to get a solicitor, let alone a barrister, to come too. It's a terrible time when your decision making isn't necessarily going to be the best, and yet you are being asked to make decisions that are potentially going to impact on the rest of your life and your kids' lives. I think one of the key things that I tried to impress upon anyone that I represented was that they're not judging your relationship. The only focus of the entire court process should be what should be in the best interests of your children.
Yeah.
And how does the law treat your particular financial situation?
Yeah.
No judge is going to turn around and go, you're the good one and you're the bad one, and so I'm going to punish him and reward you, because that's just not what they're there for.
So am I right in saying, and it may have changed, but to get a divorce, you have to cite somebody as the party of blame?
You're exactly right. So this is one of the things I wrote about in the book, which, because I found it astonishing that despite so many reports and statistical evidence about it, that no-fault divorce, as it's been termed, hasn't managed to yet make itself
How
onto the statute.
How can that be possible?
They've had debates about it in the House of Commons, but there is a bill going through the House of Commons at the moment, which should bring it into effect. And it's really kind of, I think for anyone starting off on this, it's really worth knowing the information about it, because it hugely impacts on what happens. So when you get divorced now, there are five reasons that you have to cite, one of five reasons.
Okay.
The most commonly used one in 2017, for example, 60% of all divorce petitions cited unreasonable behaviour.
Okay, so that's pretty broad.
Exactly. It still has to meet a sort of legal threshold.
Right.
And so you get this bizarre situation where you get some solicitors saying to their clients, it's just not enough. You've got to beef it up to pass the technical legal test for it being unreasonable behaviour. So right from the off, you're setting up
to try and nitpick into, yeah.
Totally. And you can't, if you consent, you can separate after 2 years. Famously in the Owens case, it was on the news all over the place. If one of you doesn't consent, you have to be separated for 5 years.
And is that like an annulment then?
No, so an annulment you very rarely come across because it's really specific. Yep. It's basically a declaration that the marriage never existed in the first place.
Oh.
It's annulled. So there are for example, if one of the parties was under the age of 16 or was forced into it. I mean, there are very really...
Oh, so I always thought that was the option that people went for when everyone's kind of, you know, you get to honeymoon, realise you don't love each other and everyone goes, let's forget that.
You can get a quickie, at the moment they call it a quickie divorce, which I think it's only like 4 or 6 months you have to be married before you could to get it through, but it's still a divorce.
So you if you decide it was a bad idea very quickly.
Yeah. But an annulment is basically a marriage that's void or voidable.
Oh.
So it's like it's never happened. So I've never really come across.
No.
But the no-fault divorce.
Yeah, so what
issue,
are the other things that you could cite as...
adultery.
Yeah.
Desertion. And then the 2 year separation or 5 year separation with or without consent. But the biggie is unreasonable behaviour, which of course gets you to say all sorts of awful
things.
Yeah,
everything comes out that... Yeah.
Exactly. So the new one, it's called the Divorce Dissolution Separation Bill. That is going to get rid of all of those and replace it with something called an irretrievable breakdown statement. So you put down why. You can do it as an uncontested divorce. You can jointly apply for it because at the moment, one of you has to decide
which
one is going to apply for it. In Scotland, they have had no-fault divorce since 2006.
Yeah. And what's
and their divorce rate's gone down. 6% of people chose unreasonable behaviour as the reason they got divorced. So almost given the option between doing a no blame, let's just try and get through this awful, awful thing without throwing mud as much as we can.
Yeah.
Most people will choose it. And I used to get lots of clients, they would have the divorce petition as part of the documents and they would point to it and go, look, it's just completely untrue what they said here. And I was like, and I'd have to go, I'm afraid it doesn't matter. Like the judge, we're not interested in why it ended particularly.
No.
Unless it's
something very significant.
Unless it's something particularly pertinent. And so, but loads of people get really riled. There was a national opinion survey that 43% disagreed with the claim that they were at fault,
mm-hmm.
and 37% denied or rebutted the allegations. So they actually went to the effort of going back.
And it's just all gets in the way of what the actual job hand is.
Yeah, the only goal for a divorce petition is to start the process of divorce, not to sling blame around.
Which leads me, I guess, to speak to you, Rosie. Where are you at with your divorce? That's a very crude way of putting it, but you're
about... I'm about to have the decree nisi read out. And so about a year on from, I guess, my marriage sort of imploding.
So let's go back to a year ago. Where were you at and how did it all begin?
Well, so I met my husband, still my husband, when I was 18. And I'm now 45. And so we'd known each other for 26 years. We'd been married for 15. It was and I thought we were totally happy.
Mm.
And so I was really shocked and devastated. So summer 2018, when sort of a series of events happened and he basically was sort of like, I'm not happy. And I desperately was trying to sort of make it work,
mm-hmm.
Trying to hold on to it basically. And then this time last year was when he left.
And at what point did you start legal proceedings?
So, it's quite interesting. I think people, you know, like my friends and my family were very keen that I, you know, that I did, because they wanted to protect me, I think. Mm-hmm. This is when I say to people, I'm really lucky. I've got a friend who's a judge in the family courts, and she said, this is my favourite barrister. And then I rang her favourite barrister, and her favourite barrister told me her favourite, you know, lawyer.
But so many people wouldn't have access to that.
They would not have access to that. And just, you know, hearing you talk about people having to represent themselves, and I've so many people who've written to me have said, you know, my husband's very wealthy, I have nothing, you know, and then that sort of disparity is just heartbreaking, isn't
it? It's fundamentally unjust,
yes,
isn't it? It's not what justice is for, just having balance.
Mm. And do you relate to that, having to cite blame somewhere?
I think if you are somebody that feels that you've been wronged, you kind of, you do have that natural thing of wanting everyone to know that. So, you know, that was sort of deeply frustrating to me in a way that actually, you know, it's like, I kind of thought, well, you've left, you've blown our life apart, you've changed what you've promised, you know, therefore, why should I and my children be the ones to suffer from that? But I do also understand, you know, the longer time goes on, the more you know, in 10 years time, I'm sure we'll just accept it as what happened, you know.
Was it immediate that from him leaving to thinking that, yes, you wanted to make this illegal?
I mean, I kind of knew, you know, once he'd gone, that we could never go back.
Yeah.
You know, I do actually know someone who got divorced and got back together with her.
I've got an amazing story for later on.
I wonder if it's the same person. But I think it's so rare. And for me, I did just know. So I thought, actually, I have to set these wheels in motion.
Yeah, and I worry, even from a personal point of view, even when you said those words, that it's over and you want a divorce, there's something about the sanctity of marriage that has already begun to fall apart at that moment.
Yeah.
When Ben and I, at a pretty dark place a few years ago, when we first went to a therapist, her opening question was, do you want to save this? And thankfully, both of us did want to. But that is it, isn't it? If one person doesn't.
Yeah. Mm. And what's quite, I mean, to sort of stare down the void of that, I think that kind of those kind of words and that kind of abyss, especially, I mean, for me, I'd never kind of really dated anyone else. I'd never really, you know, I'd always had that security. And so that kind of fear of was overwhelming to me. And as you say, you know, then you're in a position where you're saying, well, you know, please, can you pay a bit more for this, and what you're going to leave, and you're not going to pay this, and you're not going to, you know, it's just kind of horrific.
You know, the person that you met when you were 18 and you got in that relationship, and then these habits that form, and it's just interesting, these blurred boundaries, and then to have that all blown apart.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, I think that's the one thing that a lot of my friends who have split up or who are long-term single, that's the thing that really, as a woman, I think seems to really upset people, those kind of physical jobs that you didn't do. And actually, weirdly, this Christmas, that was one thing, was the idea of getting the Christmas tree, getting it into the house. And then I actually just wrote a piece for the Mail, I think it was, and I said, you know, actually, I'd got the man had put the Christmas tree in the car, had helped me put it in, and I got to the house and I thought, oh God, how am I going to get this Christmas tree in? And somehow, without me realising, my son has suddenly become this like 6'1" half man boy.
Yeah, and he can help
and
you.
I said, okay, we're going to carry that into the house, and he said, no, I'll do it by myself, and he just threw it over his shoulder and carried it in. And I thought, in a weird way, like the universe just kind of provides, doesn't it, actually, at that moment.
And he probably enjoyed that moment of kind of feeling.
And it did make me realise we'd always had row probably putting the Christmas tree up. So there was no row.
Yeah, you can easily look back at those moments and actually, like, it wasn't. And Sarah, for you, it must be hard in that you're always meeting people at one of their lowest points, aren't you?
Yeah, and I think, you know, to be totally honest, when I first started practising in this area of law, because I did criminal as well, I was in my 20s and I had very little patience. And I remember someone saying to me once, oh, I'd rather give you my money than her. And I thought, how can you say that? Yeah. You know, she's the mother of your three children. Yeah. She's given you 25 years of her life. And I think as I've got older and people I know have split up, and maybe it's just part of growing up a bit as well, I've become a lot more sympathetic as to how you get yourself in that mindset.
Yeah, you never think it's going to be you or them.
No, and I had to be sometimes quite firm with clients who wanted for the court process to be a therapy process. And in some respects, that it is. Like, there is something about having an order with a court seal on it that says, that's the end now.
Yeah.
You can start again. And some people really need that. And they're able to move on afterwards. But it's a process getting there.
But it is really true that it isn't going to solve the emotional issues. That is something you have to go and work on elsewhere, isn't it?
It is. The court process involves human beings. It doesn't involve robots. So you can be in a courtroom and form an impression about someone, and you can see that the judge has formed an impression about someone.
It might not be them.
That's the other thing I came up against a lot. It's an assumption that the law said mothers have more rights than fathers.
Yeah.
Which is what I never used to say. I was a family barrister, but I was out socially. I remember someone wanging on about it at a party about this is what the law said. And I was like, it's not really quite like that.
Mm. So what is the reality of that?
The law says you've got a statute called the Children Act, and it has something called the Welfare Checklist, which is various points that the judge will go through and say, this is how I decide what shall happen. And the first thing is, what is in the children's best interests? And then it will go through various aspects. And there is a presumption that to have both parents in a child's life is best for the child. Yeah. And then that presumption is taken away if there's evidence of risk of harm. So that is the approach that the law takes. It doesn't mention mother, father or anyone else.
But the problem is, as well, that is so changeable. You could be talking about a 5-year-old versus a 16-year-old, and how that care looks is very hard, isn't it?
You're completely right. If it's a nursing baby, it's going to need different things than a 15-year-old boy.
Yeah.
So they'd put that is all built in within the law. It can flex to go with who needs it.
But it's, again, speaking from personal experience, I'm one of four siblings from my parents, and actually we all had quite different needs, but they did a cover-all arrangement. And for example, I hope you won't mind me saying, one of my brothers didn't want to go to my dad's in the middle of the week. He found that really disruptive. But it's hard because you've gone, right, you four now are this lumped together entity, and this individual human, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think what is inbuilt within every order is that if the parents can agree on changing it, you don't need to go back to court to change it. They have a sentence that goes, or whatever the parties
may agree.
So
you're still empowered as a parent.
Totally. You don't have to go back to court to change the order. As long as you both agree with it, then you can do whatever you want, whenever you want.
So the thing I've really noticed is, as a couple, when you're together, your parenting styles, you kind of meet in the middle.
Yes,
so one might be more authoritarian, one might be more liberal.
Often.
Generally, we know which genders they form into. And, you know, you kind of moderate
each other.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And so now what we've got is a very kind of soft, liberal home. But you can't control each other, or you can't, you know, you can't moderate each other. So that also throws up problems.
Yeah, you've nailed it. That has to come up almost every case.
Not a lot. You can do that. There's kind of a whole other episode on co-parenting.
And like, how much do you step back and say, well, actually, that's your parenting style and therefore you should do that? Or, you know, when do you say, well, I feel that that's negative on their development? You know, it's so hard to know where those lines are, I think.
It is. And it's a very hard thing to tell someone as well, that them not washing their clothes in the bag or sending them back with a bunch of dirty clothes or leaving the book that they need for school at home and not returning that, or being constantly an hour and a half late whatever it might be, is incredibly annoying and probably really irresponsible, but it's not sufficient for a court. It's not really sufficient for a court to get involved. But that doesn't make it easier when you're on the receiving end of it.
Yeah, and I guess it's just, you know, there's a million things like that. So they're like, please make sure they have some fruit with their breakfast and can it be washed? You know, but it's all that stuff that actually, as a man, you probably just don't do, or certain people do, you know.
Or when you were married, you got away with it.
Yeah.
You know, we were saying to my husband the other day, I don't think you've ever, and it's not me having a jab at him, but he doesn't realise when they've all grown out of a certain size of clothes because I've done it.
Yeah.
But suddenly, if you're co-parenting, those things become much bigger triggers, and you haven't got the kind of letting it go attitude that you might do.
You haven't got the kind of love for each other.
No, haven't got the love.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
It, where
you
go,
just think,
right,
okay, I'll do that to keep the peace or whatever. Yeah,
I guess forgetting them as your ex and remembering them as the parent of your child, and holding some love of sorts for that, because that is still really important. But that's difficult if they've hurt you a lot.
I couldn't have put it better. That's exactly it. When you basically don't see them as a father,
yeah,
and you have to try and see them through your children's eyes.
And and kids are hugely perceptive, aren't they? Yeah. So in prep for this podcast, I always ask the good people of Instagram for some insight, which is always very, very enlightening. I asked them if they were divorced, and 9% were. And then I asked him if any of them were considering divorce, and a further 9% were.
Okay.
So I don't really know what to make of that, but that's quite that 9% are obviously, yeah, I wondered where they were at. I asked them to describe the experience of divorce, and I thought this was really fascinating. Here are some of the things they said. Traumatic, but no regrets. Horrific, but for the best. Difficult, but liberating. Pain and power. Amicable, but lengthy. Heart-wrenching, but empowering. It brought me to my knees. It's the best thing I ever did.
Wow.
And over again.
It's those positive,
those contradictions. All of them answered in that best thing, worst thing.
Mm.
Which I guess if you're in the eye of the storm, it really is important to hold on to that. Yeah, there's cliches of silver linings, but that undoubtedly there'll be parts of it that will lead to positives eventually. I asked them if they had any questions about divorce. A lot of people were worried about the pets. I imagine that's something you must deal with as well, how you split pets.
Yeah, especially if they haven't got any kids.
Yeah,
your pets are basically
becomes much more significant.
Kids. You could put a schedule at the back of your order and say, you know, this is who's going to get the pink sofa and this is where the cockapoo is going to go.
But you've got to remember that each of those things costs you money. Like,
yeah.
Mm.
So is the pink sofa, is it better to go and rebuy a pink sofa than spend a, you know... How often do people regret it? Is there a space that kids can seek support? Do you know anything off the top of your head?
Well, the court tries to set its system up to protect the children, but at the same time, it does that by removing them as much as it can from the process. So the only support, and I don't, this is by which I mean court ordered support, it's CAFCAS, the Children's and Family Court Advisory and Support Service. So if you have a case where two parents are disagreeing about where the child or children should live, and the one parent's going, they're refusing to go, they hate him, I have to rock him to sleep every night.
Yeah.
They say it's really emotionally impacting. Depending on the kid's age, the court can appoint a CAFCAS officer to go and speak with the child. And that is a way of getting the child's voice to court independently of the parents, whilst not bringing the child to court to say it themselves.
And that's such a common thing. Like the people who write to me quite a lot or message me is that the children, you know, not only are you dealing with all of this, but then you're sort of having to make a screaming, crying child go somewhere they don't want to go. You know, which is just heartbreaking, and you feel like they've already
been through
so much. And then I'm not saying that's the case in my case, but it seemed, but it's a very common thing, isn't it?
It's very common, and it's really difficult to deal with, both in a legal way, obviously in a human way, it's really difficult to deal with. But because it's self-defeating, if you force a kid, we all know this, if you force a kid to do something he doesn't want to do, you're going to pay the price for it. But also, there will be, as you've already said, they're perceptive.
Yeah.
They will be picking up on everything, whether or not you're protecting them from saying or having arguments in front of them. They will pick up a mood. So if a child feels like they were abandoning you because they're the enemy, they're looking after you, then of course they're not going to want to go.
No.
So you're asking, you know, often I had to give advice, which I knew how difficult it was to give it, which was, you've got to try and make this guilt-free for them to go. If they're going to enjoy the time with someone who is going to be in their life for the rest of their life and that you're going to have a relationship with at some point for a long time, then you've got to try and separate,
really,
as we've already said, husband or ex-husband and father, and make it fun for them to go, as long as you think it's safe and risk-free and all the rest of it.
But it's such a big ask, isn't it?
You've
been absolutely hurt yourself, but you've got to
be a grown-up.
You know, that's what parenting is, isn't it? It's putting someone else's needs beyond and above yours. all the time. Some people said if you can live apart before the actioning of divorce, just so that things can cool down, which I guess it depends on the circumstances, but I can see how that could be great advice.
It's very sound advice, but as we were saying earlier, not always practical, no. Because a lot of people have all of their assets tied up in their house. And they can't afford to set themselves up until they've released the money from the house.
Yes.
And they can't release the money from the house until they finalise divorce proceedings. So it's a real catch-22. And I know we would come up with arrangements, house-sharing arrangements, where you had to live in the same house during divorce proceedings and you'd have certain times that you could cook in the kitchen, leave the living room.
God,
it's I know someone doing it at the moment. It's really
that is like living hell, isn't it?
I think that's a very accurate description
and
of it. Yeah.
If there are children in that situation, yeah. That is not
poisonous, really bad. But for as a reality, that is most people can't afford not to start divorce proceedings to set up two separate homes.
I asked people, did your parents divorce and how did that impact you? And again, this was very, very split. Yes, it was horrendous. No, but they should have done. Life was miserable and scary because they didn't do the right thing. Yes, but it was the best thing for us. Two happy parents, it's much healthier for everybody. Yes, because of them, I don't see the point in marriage. Yes, it makes you grow up fast. And yes, it's given me a strong appreciation of marriage. So there you go. It's like there's no one clear-cut answer. Mm. And then I asked them if there's anything I'd missed. Someone said they highly recommended a divorce party, which my instinct is to say that's a bit naff. But you know what?
It's a great idea.
I think it was really naff. But then actually, I just kind of... I'm not sure I call it a divorce party, but I just feel so
freedom,
many people
liberation.
Have been so kind to me so supportive that I feel like to get and but sometimes they're in sort of different satellites, so they're kind of like my home friends or my school friends or my university friends or my cousins, and I just think actually to get them all into one place to say you've helped me so much, I want to be totally
but
sorted.
Also to celebrate yourself,
yeah,
like,
really,
yeah, I think, yeah. Yeah, you know, you imagine the moment when you found out this was happening and yeah. Where even you are now. Also, yeah. We need to talk about your earrings, which I read.
Oh my God, look at this. Yeah. So
so much bling.
Love it.
I turned my engagement ring into earrings.
So you had it...
Had them
all,
sort of... The stones.
Oh, all three?
Yeah, so yeah. All three. So I had the three classic three stone. And the hilarity is that, I mean... It was a sort of medium-sized engagement ring for my daughter. In the ears, they look so much bigger. So my friends are like, you look like Lewis Hamilton or something.
How did you come up with that idea?
Do you know what? I don't know, but it was almost instant. Because this time last year, I sort of had a midlife crisis, ear piercing, had this one at the top, like a hoop at the top. And I think that triggered something in my mind. I just thought, actually... That is, you know, that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, I love it. It's an active empowerment, isn't
it? Yeah,
which
it is.
All good, however that looks. As we wind up towards the end, any advice before someone gets married, prenups and that kind of thing?
I feel really conflicted. I mean, if I was a really, really, really power-hungry lawyer, I know that the legal answer would be, yeah, of course you should get a prenup and it's just sensible and practical. But the romantic side of me... I haven't.
No. And also, when you get married, you don't really know how life is going to unfurl, and the things that get complicated are houses and assets and kids, aren't they? And you can't write that at the...
The only thing that I wish I'd done is that I, you know, just totally the deal was, you know, like, he put his money into a pension, I did the kind of buying of the sofas.
Right.
You know, so I do think pension.
No, I think money.
And pension's on the table, though.
Yeah, pension. Yeah,
pension's
true,
on the table.
True, true, true.
You know, it's all.
It's all comes out in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It, you know, you will have a legal right to portion that, as you'll find out, I hope.
But it's so hard, isn't it? Those, as we're saying, in day-to-day life, the purchase is here,
And that the law is quite good about that, isn't it? In the sense that you do have access to that. And also, doesn't it sort of, everything you've put into the marriage at the point of it sort of treats as equal, doesn't it? It doesn't say your husband's earned X more than you, and you've
especially
kind of...
Especially if you've had time after, you know, maternity leave and the impact on your...
The time off, the way that the law interprets it is that it's not time off.
No.
You're enabling your husband to go out to work.
Yeah.
Because if you weren't washing his pants and cooking his food, he'd have to pay someone to do it.
Yeah, so you're looking after the children.
Which is a huge
portion. So all of that is...
Totally, yes. And I think, you know, that's also part of the advice to kind of try and educate yourself about your kind of rights in this area, which there is a lot online about, but totally that the law at the moment starts off with a sort of equal yardstick, and then the judge will move the dial up and down it depending on what your particular circumstances are.
So by way of conclusion, I think the more you look into this, it's hugely emotional, complicated and financially tough, isn't it? And there is no easy, nifty way of doing it other than to remember that long-term relationships aren't like the movies. I think that is the problem, isn't it? We're fed a Hollywood version of marriage, and then we're also fed a Hollywood version of divorce, where a judge, you imagine a judge is
Kramer and Kramer.
Yeah, exactly.
Stuff. Yeah.
And it needn't be like that.
No, I think that is the advice which most pre-litigation lawyers would give, is keep calm.
Yeah.
Don't send angry messages or put anything on social media. Sleep on it. And
which is life advice, really, isn't
it? Look through your kids' eyes.
Yeah, that's life advice. I think the key is to keep your eyes open, to keep communicating, and to know that you've given it the best shot, but that happiness will be yours again. So three things before we finish up. Where can people find you, and have you got anything to shout about?
Well, I've got sarahlangfordwrites.co.uk.
And you've got a book.
And I've got a book.
Yes.
I've got a book called In Your Defence, Stories of Life and Law, and that's under...
Oh, she's got it here.
I've got it here. It's a rather
You've
tatty...
You've read that a lot. I've got it by my bed.
That's a tatty one. Exactly. Yeah, that was published in... So it's out in paperback and ebook and audiobook.
Right. And I've got an Instagram called Life's Rosie, and I'm about to launch a website. I think that's going to be called Life's Rosie too. And I'm hoping to do a book as well that hopefully will help people, you know, navigate their own heartbreak.
You are going to do a book.
Yes, I am.
Yes.
And going back to the title of the podcast, if you could have an honest conversation with one person, who would it be and what would you say? Could be a troll, a celeb, a friend, a younger version of yourself, someone who's died. Up to you.
God.
Oh, no, not God. Actual God.
Actual God.
What would you say to him?
Or her.
Them.
I could probably ask for the secrets, no, wouldn't you?
All the answers to all the questions.
Yeah. I mean, would you
write them all down, or would you just absorb them?
I mean, in this particular fantasy, I imagine that you wouldn't have pen or paper, would you?
No, you would be floating. Or your phone too. Do you mind if we just video
selfie?
selfie.
Mine would definitely be, I think, with myself, because actually hearing what you've said, you know, there's just so much. This process has made me realise there's so much of the ego core up in relationships and there's so many layers. And just hearing you talk about, you know, that whole thing about the kids not wanting to necessarily go to their dads because, you know, subliminally you might have been, you know, putting out some kind of message. It's just about like really trying to unpick what are your intentions, you know, what's your...
That's so hard.
We've all got aspirations, and again, especially as parents, you get to the end of the day, you're like, oh, I did not do that as well as I could have done. There's so many things, but all we can do is try our best and to be reflective, and I think that is halfway there, isn't it? Then I always ask my audience to complete the sentence, I'll be honest, I, and these were some of their answers. I'm beginning to regret giving up smoking. That was on the 2nd of January. It's not good. I don't like espresso martinis. I'm more jealous of people than I care to admit. I'm fed up of my sister judging me. I'm a coke addict and have been since my husband introduced me to the drug 10 years ago. I'm 46. Wow. I hate high-waisted jeans. They are so uncomfortable to sit down in. I'm with you there. I need to stop having Toblerone for breakfast. I hate musical theatre and I don't like dogs.
I hate musical theatre.
I love musical theatre.
I hate it.
I mean, that would be my fantasy. It would be like living in The Sound of Music.
So interesting, isn't it?
For my hen do, everyone dressed up as characters from The Sound of Music.
Oh my God, I wanted that to be my hen do.
Even though you hate so it.
I don't like, I like The Sound of Music. I don't like it on stage. Yeah. I love it.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. I mean, it's a close cousin. But yeah.
My husband loves musical theatre and I don't. No. He's like, I really can't get on board with it.
Not even like Starlight Express?
No, like Grease and Dirty Dancing, yes. But the rest of it, I'd rather have... I like stuff that's going to make me feel something more. And then one from me, actually, that my wedding day wasn't my happiest day of my life. I'm very glad I committed to Ben and I love the ceremony and the party was great, but I regret that we focused the day on ensuring everybody else had a great time rather than us.
Mm. Do you know, my photographer at my wedding is kind of well, not kind of, she's incredibly hippie and awesome. I love her. She said, she kind of grabbed me right at the beginning and said, don't think about any of it apart from the moment that you're living right now. Mm, don't think about what's coming. It will all happen. It will be fine. Just think about exactly now, what's happening right present. Now. And God, that was such good gift. Advice. Mm. And it didn't fly by. I remember every moment.
You held on to it.
Yeah. I was 5 months pregnant at the time, so I couldn't get
that.
Anyway,
that helps.
Well, I think on that, I think is a good place to end. I've been Clemmie Telford, and these wonderful women have been Sarah Langford and Rosie Green. And this has been Honestly Podcast. Thank you for listening. Please rate, review, subscribe, and tell your mates all about it. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Honestly. If you found this week's episode interesting, which I hope you did, I'd love to know your thoughts. So please do give me a rating or review, and even better, hit the subscribe button. That way you'll get each week's episode delivered straight to you.